Welcome to Security Wire Weekly, a CertSecurity.com podcast for March 1st, 2012, a special edition reporting from the 2012 RSA Security Conference.
What are the security requirements that are necessary for control systems, and where do we stand on coming up with the people, processes, and technology to meet those requirements?
Hi, thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Westervelt, the news director of CertSecurity.com. In this edition, we're going to be talking about the security of our nation's critical infrastructure, and more specifically, SCADA systems, these systems that run many of the critical functions necessary to keep the lights on and have running water. Joining me to talk about some of the issues and the federal government's role in protecting the critical infrastructure, as well as driving private industry to better protect their systems because he believes it's in the nation's best interest, is Andy Purdy. Andy is Chief Cybersecurity Strategist at CSC. He has a long history in the security industry, and he's a member of the team that put together the U.S. National Strategy to Secure Cyberspace in 2003. He also was on the NCSD, the National Cybersecurity Division, in the Department of Homeland Security's Tiger team, and he led U.S. CERT for a time. I met up with Andy at the RSA conference on February 29th. Here's what he had to say.
That criticality of information sharing, it's been critical forever. The sharing of timely and actionable information to protect the key organizations of this nation, both governmental and private, is something that we have to improve how effective we are at doing that. We need to know what are the strategic priorities of this nation. And for those strategic priorities, we need to know what are the goals, objectives, and milestones for each of those priorities so we can make sure the right folks are engaged from government and the private sector. We can make sure that there are resources adequately involved, make sure the authorities are in place, and to make sure that we can track progress in helping make the nation safer. And to make sure, for example, that we've done in other sectors, like we've done in communications, to make sure that when there's a major disruption, we know who is going to do what to bring things back up in service. We have not done that in any other sectors that I can see, and nobody's asking for it. And I think that's a mistake.
The SOPA, the ACTA, all these other pieces of legislation that really turned a lot of people, I think, into activists. Is the backlash from that going to be a problem in Congress when it comes to coming up with future cybersecurity-related legislation?
I think there may be a little bit. The reaction of some folks to some short-term concerted pressure by some of these mass social media techniques shook some people up. And so anything that has potential privacy implications, I think will get a little more scrutiny than it did in the past. But there's an awful lot of stuff in the legislative pipeline or on the drawing boards in both the House and Senate about different kinds of proposals that are going to try to do something about the challenges this nation faces in cyber. And so I don't think across the board it's going to have a major impact on that, because I don't think most of those privacy is really implicated by most of those.
Okay.
The issues you were raising about possible monitoring and whatever and which agency should do what, that's a little closer to, you know, what SOPA and some of that stuff was touching on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We saw a lot of prominent experts come out in opposition to that, and I think that just kind of snowballed into everybody coming on board.
Yeah, I'm not sure shutting Wikipedia down for a day really made as much of a difference as some people said it did, but the fact of doing that certainly got a lot of press attention.
Mm-hmm. SCADA, we're hearing a lot about SCADA vulnerabilities, and from talking to different software security experts, it sounds like it's not an easy problem. It's a very complicated problem to address, right?
When I got to DHS, I was first deputy director. I think either our first full year or second full year, we put $15 million into the national laboratories working on control systems. And I don't know whether they've maintained that level of funding, but I think they've maintained a substantial level of funding with the consortium of national labs to work on this problem. So it's definitely one that's high on the radar screen. We have the Industrial Control System CERT as part of the U.S. CERT, and I guess now it's part of the NCIC, the National Cyber Communications Integration Center. So there really is a recognition of the seriousness of that problem. But again, what is the transparency of where we stand? Which is again where I get to the goals, objectives, and milestones thing. What are the security requirements that are necessary for control systems? And where do we stand on coming up with the people, processes, and technology to meet those requirements? Because you can use a lot of traditional things. You can use whitelisting, you know, they're in addition to the traditional blacklisting. You can use special identity access controls. I mean, I think there are more and more things, more and more tools in our arsenal. But I just don't have a clear picture on where we really stand on securing our nation's control system. But that's certainly an area where there's a big consensus that this is a major issue. Three of the most exciting initiatives that I think are going on. I think the cyber ecosystem effort that's being led out of DHS, actually it's DHS and the private sector. Somebody from our company, Guy Copeland, is co-chair with Jenny Mena of DHS for it. That's the paper that came out in March of last year that Phil Reitinger kind of headed. Very, very exciting vision of where we have to go. It's just tremendous. Secondly, is the NSTIC, the National Strategy Trusted Identities in Cyberspace. Hugely significant effort, which has to go hand in hand with the cyber ecosystem paper. And essentially, it's the model that we have an ecosystem, and there's an awful lot of bad stuff happening, but we need to make sure there can be trusted connections and trusted communications for those things that are special, that people can opt in to higher levels of security. That way you can still be anonymous in your, you know, freedom of speech on the internet, whatever. So that cyber ecosystem, the NSTIC, is just hugely significant. The third one, which is, you know, part of what they're going to talk about, I guess, this afternoon, is this effort. One way to look at it is the botnet issue, but I would look at it slightly broader, the role of internet service providers. What's the role of internet service providers in helping us address this risk? What's the role of any additional? Well, the FCC is working on best practices for internet service providers, which are kind of sort of modeled after what they've done in Australia with the iCode, to a lesser extent what they've done with in Japan with their ISPs. But they're particularly focused on the bots and the botnets, because the ISPs can largely see the bots in their network. And I know National Cybersecurity Alliance has teamed with DHS Commerce and the White House, as well as the private sector folks, to basically say, look, we've got to go beyond the traditional message of cyber awareness. Tell the user what they need to do to protect themselves. Well, if the ISPs, and I think in banking relationships and relations with government, we can get there as well, that the one entity can tell the consumer, you're infected. You've got malware on your computer. And this is what you can do about it. That's a level of awareness that becomes much more concrete to the user than simply the mantra, protect yourself, do what you're supposed to do, whatever. If they have actual notice that they're harming others, and somebody says, this is what you need to do about it, and hopefully at some point somebody will say, if you're going to continue to harm others and you're not going to solve this problem of malware launching attacks against other people, we're going to disconnect you.
That's so you think they should take that extra
that's
step.
The kind of thing that can really have an impact. I want to learn from the Australian experience, where they are notifying customers. Comcast has begun to do it in this country voluntarily. But in Australia, they're contacting customers who are infected. They're telling them where they can go to have their system evaluated. They can tell them when that doesn't work, where they can go to get, you know, hire a private company to basically get rid of the malware. And frankly, this visibility, this activity, and this burden is going to, I think, create some incentives for the use of some of these newer technologies. Where, for example, a user, it's really hard for a user, even one who's trying to, you know, stop, think, and connect, to figure out, is there malware on this website I'm going to? It looks like a legitimate website. That's really hard for, but there's technologies you can use that if you go to such a website, the malware cannot get on your computer. And so this kind of notifying and letting folks know, and they've got to improve and they need to know what to do, is going to help encourage these technologies that make it easier for laymen to operate in cyberspace easily in a much safer way. And that's a level of awareness and communication that I think is going to be much more effective. last year, I think there became a recognition by senior government officials and major private sector players that the systematic online theft of intellectual property is a major problem of national security significance that affects the competitiveness of the United States on the world stage. I think that is a development that has become very clear in the last year, and it's very troubling, and a lot more needs to be done about it.
This is, you're talking to these targeted attacks that are nation-state driven necessarily, or even cyber-criminal driven? Which one?
Well, it's sometimes hard to tell who's behind the attacks, but certainly you have sophisticated attackers, either nation-states or people working for nation-states. But increasingly, you have the ability of folks who are less well-resourced than nation-states to use more sophisticated attacks. So the Stuxnet malware that affected the Iranian nuclear systems at Siemens company, less sophisticated actors are taking that code and adapting it to be able to launch more sophisticated attacks than you would normally expect those kinds of players to do. So the ability of a broader range of threat actors to cause more significant problems is certainly gotten worse.
What do you think is the government's role in here, and has the government's role changed over the last several years?
Well, when we worked on the National Strategy to Secure Cyberspace, it came out in 2003, I think the criticality of action by the government and the private sector and very frequently in an active public-private partnership is well known, going back to Presidential Directive 63 before that. So government has to play a role to help protect government systems, help protect the national security emergency preparedness communications of the nation, and needs to work in partnership with the private sector to help protect our critical infrastructure so that we can maintain the availability and integrity and confidentiality of critical information. Because since that time, it's been 9 years now, our dependency as a nation on our information technology systems has become so manifest for our national security, our economic well-being, our public safety and law enforcement, and the privacy of our data. So we are increasingly vulnerable as we're increasingly getting the benefits of information technology.
Do we need to push for better technologies? Do we need to push for some sort of better information sharing approach?
Well, I think as it's almost become a mantra over the years that to address this evolving challenge requires people, processes, and technology. And I think two of the most important areas require a visibility into what are the strategic priorities of the nation. Who are the key stakeholders who need to be involved in it, and trying to set goals, objectives, and milestones for doing it. And those two major areas have to do with risk, which is, of course, the threat, vulnerabilities, and consequences. So we hopefully learned some lessons from the terrorist attacks of 9/11, from Hurricane Katrina. We need to assess the risk. We need to manage the risk much more effectively so we can track kind of where we basically what we need to worry about and what we need to do about it. The second major area is information sharing, that we have to get beyond the point that we say we have to share more information with more people. We need to understand what information we need from whom, how those players need to be involved in detecting what matters, in working together to analyze the significance of what they detect, and to be much more coordinated in our ability to react to that which is important, and so that we're much more prepared, if there is a disruption, to recover. So that we can have our systems, both governmental and private sector, back up and running.
You're familiar with the cryptographers panel that they do every year here at RSA. Well, and you know it's very laid back, and they kind of joke and have a good time, but also discuss some pretty important issues, I think, that happened over the previous year. One of the cryptographers this year said that he was very interested in what organization within the government would handle critical infrastructure protection. And he made the case that it should be the NSA and not necessarily the DHS. And he joked that why should we entrust security of our critical infrastructure with an organization that is in charge of the TSA at our airports?
Well, I'm not going to take sides in that. The issue about the role of NSA, the issue of DHS, and frankly the role of Cyber Command as well, has been part of the debate since I was part of the team that wrote the national strategy, since I headed cyber for DHS back in 2004 to 2006. And I think we need to look at things like, I don't know if you saw the front page of the Washington Post on Tuesday, where the issue you're talking about was covered, and it revealed some things, at least, that I didn't know. But what is it that everybody seems to agree on? The question of who's actually going to do it, I think, sometimes can be of lesser importance. And what do we need to do? Because if we have an idea of what we need to worry about, we need to know what we're going to do about it, and we need to know how we're doing at it and how we need to improve. And that is that among the things that we need, and I mentioned the risk analysis and the risk mitigation plans and the information sharing, it sounds like there's a consensus among those players, DHS, White House, Justice apparently was in that, and NSA, that among the other things we need to do for information sharing, we need to have somebody use the classified signatures to help protect our private sector. I didn't see that stated explicitly in the Post article, but that to me is fundamental. As I said, as we have an idea of what we need to worry about and then the question of what we need to do about it, nothing is a single answer.
That does it for this edition of Security Wire Weekly. Be sure to check out our previous podcasts by going to our podcast landing page at searchsecurity.com/podcast. You can also take a look at our RSA Security Conference coverage. We have a landing page that has all of our coverage, including videos, podcasts, at searchsecurity.com/RSA2012. That's searchsecurity.com/RSA2012. Thanks very much for joining us. Have a great day.